10 years old and you can't even drive? I can. Are you stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive. Bit grey today, isn't it?
I'm here. Welcome to another edition of The Deepest Lore. I've also just been covered in Fanta, as I was telling Farrah before we came on air. It tumbled out of the fridge, rolled on the floor, and then when I opened it, you know, when it goes... that serves me right for coming off keto after a month or whatever, however long it was.
I was going to ask, are you officially off now? Are you off the bandwagon?
Well, it always happens. It was the... It was that bloody Eyes Wide Shut party I went to. but I do have this boxing,
the boxing punch bag.
The punch bag that I set up, and I have my new Elite gaming chair. You want to see it?
Send a picture. Yeah, let's have a look.
Hold on. That's the wrong account. That's old Charlie Getfresh, my friend. Hold on. Yes, I finally cracked and bought an Elite gaming chair, much to the chagrin of absolutely everybody.
I love the list. This is literally one of my favorite things you've done in a while. It's so good. It actually does show just how many content creators are out there, doesn't it, really?
Well, this is a list of content creators better than Adam and Sitch. So, people saying, can you type it up? No. although I did you notice Steve Turley was listed twice?
Yeah, that's great.
That just shows that it was stream of consciousness, and I just literally forgot I listed Turley, you know.
Turley's so good at shilling. He literally was the only one that could be in your head twice. So.
Oh, yeah, look.
This is also great. Yeah, a really good point. Yeah, and again, I was thinking about the, you know, Gaston's manservant or whatever. He's a bit of a...
Yeah, well, see, Beauty and the Beast is where Disney starts to get subversive because, of course, yeah. Gaston is now a scrat of the soul, but, of course, he's a bad guy.
That's true.
Whereas, I mean, here you can see the pearly kings and queens are all... They're kind of grotesques, you know, they're... And whereas the aristocratic characters are literally, I mean, amazingly good looking and beautiful, you know. So, anyway, where are we? That was my different origin stories. All I'm trying to do is find my Elite gaming chair. Somebody said morph. Here we go. What do you think?
I mean, lovely. I'm imagining you starting a Twitch channel. You could go like full Hassan, couldn't you? You know, just go. Start doing live streams from Twitch and stuff. And again,
do you know how much this chair was, right? It wasn't £1,000 like that bloody, what was that chair that you guys wanted, Herman Miller or whatever? but it was an it was still like over 250 quid, this chair. So
it does look comfy.
Yeah, and I've got these, look, you attach this neck pillow and this.
The lumbar supports, yes, lovely.
Yeah. So I've pulled that down a bit lower. So, but it's on wheels, and I'm still getting used to that. I'm kind of wheeling about, you know, like a wheeler. Did you ever see Return to Oz? Wheeler.
Yes.
okay. Now, before we get going, there's been an amazing new advert on the scene. We're going to be talking about 80s adverts today, and it's quite fitting because. You, sir, Pharaoh, have made an 80s advert for your brand new course, Foundations of Entrepreneurship. Should we have a little watch of it?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Now you're turning lead into gold. The future is yours, it's waiting. Get in for the ride. The skills that you are creating cannot be denied.
Well, that's bloody brilliant, Pharaoh. Did you put that together all on your own then?
I assembled an elite team of people to help me with it. So the idea came was like, after the initial launch, I was thinking, you know, I need to go big. I need to kind of show off the entrepreneurial creds with a big advert. And so I started working on like a little jingle / tune, and ended up coming up with the words and like the bare chords for that backing track. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know, because all my recording equipment's packed away in the loft somewhere still. I thought, you know, I need to get someone to kind of take this to the next level. And so I had to involve Chris Mulbakai, the troubadour of the online right.
Yes, the official bard of unpopular opinions and indeed this channel. So
exactly. Yes. And because I just wrote the lyrics, did the chords for it, and then he I said I was looking for like an 80s rock feel, like synth rock, and then he's like, why don't you just go all in synth? He added a lot to, like, he had like the nice little solo at the beginning, and he did the vocals as well, because my voice is nowhere as good as his is. So and then with the actual video itself, I mean, I had to pay homage to the master of the video decoupage yourself. And so I just took a whole lot of random videos. I think you've basically created an entire genre of film, by the way.
the 80s cheesy commercial.
It's just you like collecting or curating a whole lot of like videos together into, you know, it's kind of like almost like what's it called, found art or whatever. You're kind of strolling through the internet finding different.
Yes, the montage. I mean, I would not lay credit to creating that. Of course, I grew up in the MTV generation. Pharaoh, our aesthetic is all borrowed. we call it borrowed kind of fragments. I mean, in a way, that's what hip hop is. It's all borrowed, retooled, repurposed. Yes. Incidentally, I happen to know that Morcar has been playing a game recently called Mad Games Tycoon.
Okay. 2.
Yeah. In that, Chris Mulbakai is his head sound, like he's the sound guy. He's like the eight bit chip tune god.
Brilliant.
And he's won many, many awards. But there may be a retrospective of Morcar games coming soon, he tells me. That's what he's been up to.
Okay, interesting. Also, can I just a quick shout out to Cringe Walker, who did a lot of the overlays. So he did the text over the top for the words and the kind of cool VHS style intro as well, which I thought was quite fun. So thanks, Cringe.
I just want to mention something. There was a very rude chap in the chat who was counter signaling my courses, now banned for life if I ever see you again. Do not show your face again here, RMF. But I will just say that I have been in talks, let's just say, with some people to actually give a qualification to the courses on the academic agency. I don't know how long that is going to take, but soon these courses should be accredited. And I double checked and they should actually be backwardsly compatible as well. So if you've actually done one of the courses, it should carry some sort of
certification.
Yes, but it's not with the higher education people, because that's when you get the SJWs involved and, yes, you know, how many white authors have you got and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It should be a professional qualification. So put that in your pipe and shove it, RMF. What else, Pharaoh? What else?
That was it. Really, I mean, I was quite cynical with my choices. You know, like all the way through, I was just trying to think about stuff that the audience would like, and I think people have liked it so far. My favorite clip was the woman with a donkey. No, the woman with the pony, the horse or whatever. And I tried to tie that into ambitions, as that was the kind of ultimate right-wing desire to have a beautiful woman, a bit of land and a horse. You know, that's
Bowie in that video, by the way. Who's the guy there's a guy in the middle of it with very cool hair.
Is he sitting down, is he?
Let me just show you, because I've always wanted this hair. Hold on. Oh, yeah, I can't. For some reason, I can't pause it from this. Maybe if I do it this way. Hold on. This way.
Your ambitions are bold. You log into foundations. Now you're
That guy there.
That guy. No. That was just like an audio equipment ad. So again, if you go back a little bit, you can see that he was kind of being blown away by the speakers, basically. But yeah, he has great hair. Very, very jealous.
Yeah, I've always wanted hair like that, but unfortunately my hair is curly. And so I've never, like, my dream is always, yeah, I've always wanted like a quiff. Do you know, I got it done once, right? I went to the guy and said, listen, for my whole life I've wanted like a proper like 1950s teddy boy quiff, you know. And he said, oh yeah, I can do that. In my day we used to call it a DA, a duck's ass, right? And he did it, and I had it for one day. I had immaculate hair like that. And I got back and my ex-wife said I hate it. And basically immediately messed it all up with
ruffled
her,
it. With oh, her hands, sad.
Ruffled it, and that was it. It was done forever. So
in the future, when you have your own private hairdresser, you know, you can have that every single morning. He can kind of decurl your hair and you can go out with the duck's ass.
So yeah, it's unfortunate that. But anyway, today we want to talk about I guess inspired by the foundations of entrepreneurship, we want to go back to the old school of Deepest Lore and start analyzing some advertisements, some commercials, because
it's been a while.
They've always been very popular, our commercials breakdowns, but also we thought it'd just be a cool vibe basically to watch some 80s stuff. So you know the drill, Farah. I'm going to play these commercials. They're all in there's two different compilations I've got, and they're all just together. So whenever you want to say something, just say stop and I'll pause it, okay?
Of course.
Leave it on. America, see the music you want to see.
I want my MTV. All right.
I want my MTV.
Can we still, yeah, sorry.
Now that's Cyndi Lauper, isn't it?
Yeah, and was that Billy Joel before as well, Dancing with Myself?
I think that was Billy Idol.
Billy Idol.
Billy Idol, yes. Go on, Farah.
Yeah, I was just saying, so it's interesting. So obviously MTV kind of, when was the launch date? Like, must have been 83 or something?
I think it was 1983, 84. In fact, there's a couple of tie-ins with MTV and the history of Deepest Lore, right?
Okay.
Because, we're looking at Cyndi Lauper here. Cyndi Lauper was actually massive in getting pro wrestling, like, on the map as a pop culture thing. There was something called The War to Settle the Score, and then later The Brawl to End It All, and, of course, the first WrestleMania. And Cyndi Lauper was in wrestling. She had, like, an angle... She feuded with Captain Lou Albano. There was this whole thing, like her manager was involved. And it all stemmed from the fact that Lou Albano was in her... He's briefly in the video for Girls Just Want to Have Fun, I think. And because he was in that video, he was claiming that he made her everything that she was.
Brilliant.
And you see that an instant pro wrestling feud, right? So Cyndi Lauper, very big on, early 80s pro wrestling. The other tie-in, believe it or not, is to, do you remember I did a stream on that strange, obscure band called The Residents?
Oh, yes, yeah. So that's still a brilliant, brilliant
yeah, song. Now that band, The Residents, in the early 80s, were one of the few bands who actually bothered to make music videos. I mean, but Bowie also made them, right? But a lot, I mean, if you have a look in the 70s, they didn't really make videos. It's often like live footage, or it will be you know, the record played over scenes from a tour or something like that, right? They didn't really make music videos as we think of them today. Only a few people did, and the Residents were one of those people. Now, of course, because MTV was like they had needed to fill, I mean, hours and hours and hours of airtime, the Residents actually sneaked on to a lot of early AC's MTV, which is very odd, of course, because they're an extremely obscure band, and they're quite kind of subversive and dark as well. So, yeah, those early Residents videos got quite a lot of playtime, which is just a kind of little...
They were first to market kind of thing. You know, there was actually no one else to choose, so...
Yeah, I mean, they. I mean, literally, there was nothing else at all, other than the bands who were coming out with their, you know, like whoever, like Culture Club, Adam and the Ants. Trying to think of the other early 80s. Talking Heads had a lot of videos in the early 80s, I seem to recall. Buggles, Video Kill the Radio Star. Yep, that's an early. Bowie. So anyway, but Bowie also got a lot of play for that reason, because he actually had videos, whereas a lot of artists did not. I'm trying to think, like, I think Bob Dylan's first music video is Joker Man from 1983.
Okay. Yeah.
Bad video as well.
Well, that's it. I sort of love those early videos because it's so experimental and they're trying to figure out what to do. Is it this kind of, are we just showing the band? Because again, correct me if I'm wrong here, I get the impression that MTV was kind of coming out of a lot of the TV pop shows where, you know, you had live performances, and then what do you do if the band's not there? You know, you put pans people in or whatever. So this kind of concept of music plus images comes out of these live TV shows. Mm-hmm. So why not create an entire 24/7.
D will kill me as well, by the way, if I don't mention the other obvious tie into MTV, which is Andy Warhol, of course. There's this very serious argument to say that MTV wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Warhol's concept of the kind of famous for 15 minutes, you know, his stars, you know, his superstars. That's worth mentioning as well, I think. Mm. I think there's I seem to remember we discussed MTV on one of the many parts of the Andy Warhol series. So let's carry on. Sorry.
Just quickly before we go on, just in terms of the adverts, so obviously MTV started off with quite a big bang, and these are kind of like the adverts you'd see on, you know, like cable TV. And again, I think what's clever is they instantly know who their audience is. It's a younger group of people, but it's all tied into what we call today the idea of the influencer. You've got Cindy here. She's going to appeal to a certain set of people. She's going to have her fan base, and they're literally placing MTV next to Cindy. So again, Cindy's fans, and then associating those things together. You know, this is kind of like branding 101 is about creating positive connections and connotations.
I actually find Cyndi Lauper fascinating, given that she helped put both pro wrestling and MTV on the map. She must have had one of the most malleable fan groups, because she was able to, in wrestling they call it transferring heat.
Okay.
Right, so let's say you've got an established wrestler like Hulk Hogan, right? And I'm trying to get some new star over. I mean, even I have to think about doing this. I mean, they have to think like, well, you know, I'm bringing Gio on the show. Mm. Who can I put him with to help get him over with the audience? You know, so you end up positioning people. So, like, for example, when they brought in Junkyard Dog, they stuck him in a tag team with Hulk Hogan to introduce him to the fans. And the idea is that some of that popularity from Hogan is going to rub off, and now those Hogan fans are going to become JYD fans as well. And it's the same idea here, right? Is that there's going to be some like residual Lauper fan who sticks behind and watches the other stuff on MTV.
Exactly. Yeah. I really love the old MTV logo. You know, it's very cartoonish. So again, you're getting that kind of young appeal. But it's also kind of fresh and more casual. So again, think about like 60s and 70s logos of like the BBC and ITV and Channel 4. That'll be Channel 4's afterwards, isn't it? I mean, yeah. they're very kind of stiff and 2D and stern, while this is kind of very playful and colourful.
You know, I understand what you're saying, right? But I kind of hate that as well. I like the stiff old, because, I mean, by the time you get to the 90s, right, even this logo is too stiff. Everything has to be slightly on the wonk. Everything has to be extreme. Everything has to be like a bit jaunty, you know?
Mm.
Do you remember when they shifted the BBC logo to be on the wonk? Do you remember they did that? They made it cost millions and millions of pounds.
Yeah. That's quite interesting. They've been through several rebrands, haven't they, over time? And I think it's got progressively worse.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of WWF, they started with a big, bold, stiff logo, right? Mm. But by the time you get to the 90s, it's now like italicized and scratched, you know. And everything went like that by the night. Mm. And then so the very notion of formality is now disappeared from the culture, you know, because everything has to be, you know, loud and teenage.
Well, and I think that's probably due to MTV success as well. I think that they're one of the first kind of brands to break through in that kind of way and, you know, target kids in a very explicit way, so.
Yes.
I won't.
There's Dave.
That's Bowie.
Now, there should be a Bowie series coming at some point in the summer. It's being planned, but it's going to be a lot of work, that, so, you know.
I'm excited.
I've never seen this bit of footage, by the way.
Bowie attacks by an MTV bee. I mean, it's definitely a bit surreal.
Now, if I were to guess, judging by his hair, judging by the fact they're playing Modern Love in the background, I would say this is late 1983, this advert.
Yeah.
If I had to guess. if not early 1984 at the very latest, I'd suggest, yeah. Because if it was any later, they'd be playing music from Tonight, which was a 1984 album, and his hair would be a tiny bit longer. So, yeah.
24 hours a day on cable TV.
I want my MTV, MTV, MTV!
Yeah, too much is never enough.
Sorry, just on that, just finishing up. I quite like the end as well, where they're just kind of repeating MTV, MTV, MTV. Again, it's that idea of repetition is going to kind of increase recall. It's going to lodge that brand into your head as well. So it's a simple idea. And they also had the different people talking about a different, like, USP, you know, like a unique proposition with, what's his name, Culture Club guy.
Boy George, yeah.
Yeah, Boy George.
He was also big in 90s. Culture Club specifically were big in 1983 as well, bolstering my case that this is 1983.
Pretty good though. I think it's obviously a very effective advert, but I think it has spawned like so many copycats over the years, which are quite intolerable. So,
somebody in the chat is saying Joker Man is a good video. I knew somebody would say that. I mean, Kubrick is happening as well in the summer. What else? Somebody also said this was just before Bowie's dark period. It was kind of funny because I was asking for people like who wants to do what. And I said, like, listen, Bowie from 84 to about 1995, I'll do on my own. Because nobody wants to do it.
I was almost going to suggest coming in just because my dad loved those records randomly. So I had them played to me in the car loads as a kid. So.
What late 80s Bowie?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why.
Never Let Me Down. And,
Absolute
Beginners. But, you know, I don't know.
Not the best tracks, but...
Did he have Tin Machine albums?
Yeah. He had them all. He was like a really big Bowie fan, and I think he just continued on despite the musical quality, let's just say.
See, that's given me... For most people, that would drop him respect. But for me, it's given him respect, you know. If he's got a copy of the Buddha of Suburbia trend soundtrack, me and your dad can be best friends. I will say, just by the by, if you want to prep for that particular episode, there's a live show from Tokyo in 1990, which is really good. And okay. there's also a video called Fame 90. That's also and a remix of Fame. So watch those. But we were still doing cool stuff in that period.
It's yeah, just exactly.
Like, you know. All right, let's carry on.
Sony, more than a brand, a standard that others try to reach. A tradition of excellence with exacting values in design and engineering.
Can I just say I'm absolutely loving this, Farrah? Absolutely loving this. Fucking brilliant.
One thing I'd say about the 80s is obviously you've got the kind of the rise of computer-generated images. And so you can, you know, do stuff like that. I think in the 70s, it was often like hand-drawn. But then it was starting to come in through computers. So
this reminds me a little bit of Tron, of course, which has got the amazing David Warner in it. Yes.
Yeah, no, for sure. But also, I'm glad you kind of stopped at the shop, because I think this sums up a lot of the, like, one of the reasons why I think the 80s aesthetic is so beautiful. They often have these kind of quite dark backgrounds, just from like a value perspective. So you've got this kind of like dark imposing background, but they also kind of use beautiful women, but in a very subtle way. So you can see, you know, the owner of this Sony TV, he's a guy who has he's cultured, he's stylish. He's loved by women who just, you know, just imagine having a woman just hanging out while you're just messing around with the TV remote in the background. You know, that's you're literally being placed in the view of the TV owner right now.
Also, look at the godlike Faustian power of that finger.
the finger,
like Faustian man unleashed the Nietzschean 1980s, you know.
Yeah.
Just as Patrick Bateman's around the corner.
Exactly. The only thing that's triggering me is the line of the blue line. Is it the wrong angle?
If you look at
the angle of the device, just from a perspective, the artist should be shot for that anyway.
Yes. You never see Cringewalker making continuity errors like that.
Well, exactly.
By Sony. It's a Sony.
Fucking with it. AA Radio might be making a comeback because these
brilliant.
Videos.
Yeah, yeah.
These videos
inspired are with you again.
I may have to use them for something.
Yeah. The tagline is quite interesting. You know, it's a Sony. You know, you got to think about the context for that is someone telling their friend or someone asking their friend, "What TV is that? That's amazing. What, like, that looks really good." And then you say, "It's a Sony," you know. So it's this concept of it's so good that your friends are going to be asking about it. So again, I think it's a very subtle but very clever tagline. And again, I think we've lost all of that subtleness.
Are they talking past the sale already? To use the Blairism,
yeah.
You know.
I wonder to an extent, but also kind of like the guy who's going to buy these kind of high end TVs wants to kind of show off. It's a talking point. It's a kind of sign of luxury and status. And so you want people to be asking, you know, what's that? Do you know what I mean? You want to show off a little bit. So it's kind of saying Sony is the showy off brand. And, you know, Sony TVs, I used to, as I said last time, I used to sell them back in the day. And obviously they were priced right at the high end of the range and were always like considered to be quite luxury. So,
yeah, I mean, one of the things that I remember when I was a kid, obviously, I was too young in the early 80s but I was around in the mid 80s to remember certain things, is that there are a lot of brands that people have completely forgotten about now that were still around. Like there was, I remember we had a Ferguson video VHS tape player and Philips were around as well. Mm. So there were a lot of, and I do remember Sony being associated with high end of the market. I mean, they're a Japanese brand, right? But it was seen as a sign of quality, even back then, if you saw a Sony, higher than Panasonic or any of those British brands I mentioned. Yeah.
Well, again, it's interesting because, again, Japanese brands post-Second World War, totally devastated. They got all the kind of the patents and the funding from the Americans, and they were just knocking out low quality rip-offs and copies of the marketplace. But within a 20-year period, the Japanese had started to create higher quality items. Are you familiar with the Kaizen and just-in-time models at all? Have you ever heard of those before?
No, I have not. I've heard of just-in-time. I'm not really a fae with the details. What's all that about then?
It's basically weaponized Japanese autism in business, where we're just-in-time. Imagine you're trying to create a TV. Think about the supply chain, right? So the supply chain is all of the things you need to create that TV. Now, in the past, you were just buying tons of the different parts. So you'd buy like 10,000 bolts to bolt it together. You'd buy 10,000 glass screens, etc. But with the just-in-time, that they basically said, we're going to have really low stock of the different items and then bring it in whenever we needed it. And it meant they didn't have much dead stock ever. So it's very efficient.
Yeah.
And this concept of Kaizen, which is, I think it's like total quality replacement or something like that. It's been a while since I've looked at it. But they would look at the different processes during creation and try to cut the fat off it. So the Japanese are very good at breaking things down, trying to streamline things and make them better. And that's how they managed to turn around. Like I said, it's kind of like this weaponized Japanese autism, where they're able to go from almost like the China of the world to producing the luxury product, which is very rare to happen.
That's quite interesting. I've been getting flashbacks. Now, the first time I've thought about Ferguson TVs in a long time. I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day, there used to be such a thing as TV repairmen.
And TV rentals as well. Again,
and, I used to rent out. Talk about foundations of entrepreneurship. When I was little, my mother ran a bed and breakfast, and I used to rent out my own television set to the people for, I think it was, my going rate was like £10 for the week or something like that. thinking back on it, I reckon they were just giving me a tenner, but they would take the TV as well. So, you know, that was a little earner for me. I remember that the TV repair guy, we called him Cliff TV, right? Oh, we need to call Cliff. The TV's gone again. And he was fucking massive, Pharaoh. He must have been about 40 stone, this guy. He was absolutely enormous. And Cliff TV would come, wade in. And of course, when he'd bend over to fix the TV, all like this absolutely enormous 30 stone ass was just like in the like facing you. I just can't get the image out of my mind. So
literally, I'm imagining you in some kind of Freudian nightmare, you know. Oh dear. Horrific. I imagine him being super Welsh as well.
I can't actually remember his voice. All I can remember of Cliff TV is him is his backside, to be honest. But
just on the TV repair thing again, this is something that's happened in the last 20 or 30 years, I'd say. You know, this idea of intentionally making a product unrepairable. You know, Apple is very well known for doing this. They'll intentionally stick things together, to quote, you know, to help with the design process, but it's 100% to make it unrepairable. And again, I think it's really interesting. To be fair to Jobs, at the start of you know, some of his earlier products, you could repair them, and there was a kind of a large repairing scene. Even the Genius Bar, they would make an attempt to repair stuff, but now it's just, if there's a problem, they will literally just chuck it away or charge you almost as much as the phone to repair things.
I have had my iPhone repaired dozens of times, Pharaoh, because it keeps on slipping out of my pocket and smashing on the floor. I finally got myself a case for it, and it's a kind of lemon, kind of lovely pastel lemon yellow color. Okay. And I tell you what, since I've had this phone case, I have had, I'm not kidding you, 6 different compliments in different places of people saying, "Oh, I really like your phone case. Where did you get that?" So it's just one of those things. So there we go. Anyway, let's carry on.
We found the front wheel drive cars America wants at the new expanded reliable Minivolts.
Forenza, Oldsmobile's newest front wheel drive scissors with fuel efficiency, discounted.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
What's the men of old?
I guess this is like a used car dealership chain. Americans in chat can confirm.
It's a hell of a budget on it. I mean, it's a great advert.
Sierra, the appeal of cutlass, the ease of front-wheel drive, discounted now.
Omega.
Can we just go back to that guy's face? Just the turn. This needs to be looped into a GIF somewhere. Just
fuel efficiency, discounted now.
Cutlass Sierra, the appeal of cutlass, the ease of front-wheel drive, discounted now.
Omega.
I love that guy. Cringe Walker has to turn him into a GIF. That's what I would.
Yeah, exactly.
Lumia, front-wheel drive excitement, discounted now.
Bigger discount plus
GM cash bonuses
up to $750 now
at the reliable men of olds.
I was just gonna say that you need. Like you're saying, the budget is high. The budget is very, very low for this. You know, they've obviously just rented a studio, got three low-tier actors, a couple of smoke machines. You know,
it looks fucking amazing, though.
But this is it. It's just kind of like creativity and invention, and it's just fun. And there's something really interesting actually, where today again, creative budgets are just so ridiculously high. They're getting higher and higher and higher as time goes on, and I think just the ad quality is lower and lower. And I don't know if it's just like the quality of people producing adverts has gone down, or you know, other factors. But you know, this is better than anything you'll see on TV today.
You know, Oliver Semiagog was saying like we need like a team name, and I suggested the Licorice All Sorts. You know,
oh yes, yeah.
Bassett. I quite like the Reliable Men of Old. Fucking amazing.
I want all of us. Google that.
The Reliable Men of Olds. I mean, they must be, they're probably just called RMO now, right? I imagine.
It's not there. We need to buy it. We can probably buy the name, buy the branding.
It's brilliant.
Little sharks.
Very Bronze Age pervert. Pearl,
I was going to say exactly, yeah.
There's an awful lot.
No, is that like Talking Heads ripoff? Like, what is that music there? It's kind of faux Talking Heads, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But again, all of it's like original pieces. Again, if you compare this to today's music, I would say 50% of music is like covers. Acoustic covers by women. I am literally on the rampage. I hate women covering pop songs in an acoustic way and putting it on adverts. It's literally the worst. You know, because again, there's actually talented people that can create jingles. You know, the idea of a jingle and a tune is really important.
Like Chris Mordecai, for example.
Well, exactly. I mean, like I said, and myself as writer of the music as well. But in another age, I would be like the jingle king. That's all I'm saying. But again, the talent has gone to a degree where, again, people are just happy to kind of reuse pop songs or whatever.
Looking at this image, by the way, we also had a Sharp video player and recorder.
Okay, nice.
Until my brother, happy birthday, by the way, if you watch this, my brother put a jam sandwich in it when he was little. He just stuck a piece of bread with jam in the actual video recorder, and my dad could not fix it, and that's I think when we got rid of the Sharp and then ended up having the Ferguson one or whatever it was. So yes,
just going back to the ad a second, so again, obviously you've got the kind of the rise of consumer electronics in everyone's home being owned as well, so again going from rentals to purchases. And again, it's interesting the images they use. Can we just go back to the start a second? So you've obviously got the BAP image, but again, it's the physical manifestation of power. And then is it a microwave? He's kind of flogging. I mean, I also like this hand electric there as well.
Is that a microwave he's got there? Is that chicken in a microwave?
It seems very small. I don't know. It seems.
I think it's a portable TV set, isn't it?
A portable TV. Okay.
I think this is a Sharp advert.
Yeah.
There, that's a Sharp Ghetto Blaster. That was a little portable TV he had. Yeah. I'm guessing this is a Sharp video camera, home movie camera.
And again, I just love the apartment as well. It's great. This kind of like expanded space. Again, buying this item is going to give you the luxury and dreams you've always wanted.
Do you think there's a tiny, tiny suggestion that they could film porn later?
I don't know.
Because it's just weird. It's just weird.
Your one corrupted Ash's mind there, AA. Yeah.
Just sort of one bloke with one woman leaning on her.
Sad. Please pray for AA in chat, everyone. Thank you. Prayers for...
There's an awful lot going on in video these days, and it's all going on at Shark. Sharp video. From sharp minds come sharp products.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that tagline. Yeah.
There is an intrinsic meritocracy to the whole thing, though. The whole, it's still aspirational. I think we've said this before, haven't we? That the 80s were...
It's a very bourgeois, yes, yeah.
It's upwards looking and it's aspirational. And a little bit climbing in middle class as well.
Yeah, it does have this hierarchy as well. Like again, there's definitely that. But again, they're aspiring to something, you know, that they've placed something on the pedestal. Again, can we go back to that shot with like the two kind of women? It's really interesting the vision of womanliness that they're kind of proposed, and they almost look like opera singers or something. You know, these are high class girls that'll be at the theatre, and the guy's wearing like a tuxedo as well. So you're right, yes. there is something kind of like you're selling this kind of luxury elite lifestyle to everyone, but yes. it's distinctly hierarchical at the same time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would also say that these are empowered women as well. They're not kind of they're feminine, but they're still empowered in the kind of Thatcher sense of the word.
Yes, yeah.
You know, it's all a bit shoulder pads. Yeah.
Sharp video. From sharp minds come sharp products.
I just love that that guy who's kind of reacting to the videos flying out, and because obviously it'd all just be like him in a green screen or whatever, and it's like just imagine briefing the actor. So just imagine there's a whole lot of videos flying towards you. What kind of reaction can you give? And he just sort of judders around.
Do you think there's a hint of like David Cronenberg in that?
Yeah, maybe. Ones.
It's kind of like Videodrome, or
yeah, exactly,
you know, like
yeah.
the machines are attacking you. You're caught in this. If you don't catch up, if you don't embrace this kind of electronic world, you too will be bamboozled like this chump here.
can we go back to him? I just love him so much.
And it's all going on at Shark.
Sharp video. So he's bamboozled by it.
He's just in the land of circuit boards. It's the future is there.
All right.
I also hate the tagline here. From sharp minds come sharp products. It's just a low grade pun. Not good.
But look, if you embrace the technology, you too can be a sleek, elegant woman bending over a TV.
Whereas if you don't embrace the woman, you're going to have the woman. Remember, that's it. Again, you're kind of presenting what you'd like to have. That's why in my Foundations of Entrepreneurship video, I've got that woman with the horse. You know, that's the same idea. You're sort of dangling the dream, so to speak.
Sharp minds come sharp products.
Step into the world of tomorrow with Hitachi, an innovative world of electronics, determined to take you beyond ordinary hi-fi, where exceptional sound quality is programmed into Hitachi's sophisticated compact disc player, including a laser-based system that challenges you to identify the recording from the original.
Bloody hell, when did the CDs come out? This is early for CDs, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe 89 or something.
Wow.
That's quality. That's Hitachi.
Didn't think much of that Hitachi ad.
No, I mean, again, they're trying to kind of have the connotations of space age and the future, but I think it hasn't been attractive. Interestingly, again, the talking about the kind of unique selling features of the CD being the audio fidelity is as good as the recording. So again, like. remember when you're trying to sell a product, you have to kind of highlight what are the reasons why you want to purchase from mm-hmm. you rather than someone else. And for the CD player, it's about, you know, I guess smallness of size compared to like an LP, and also fidelity. And that's what they're going to big up.
I mean, here's a general observation I make, is that the 80s vision of the future, because I think we often think about the 1950s vision of the future.
Yes.
Kind of utopian mid-century thing. The 1980s vision of the future also seems to me quite exciting and quite like it's kind of, ooh, look at the new frontiers we're going through. If you look at the way future tech is talked about and presented today, it's got a distinctly dystopian flavor. It doesn't feel exciting. It feels scary. Whereas all of this is presented almost like, well, we're heading into Star Wars here, and that's awesome. What do you think accounts for that change?
That's a really good question. I think at this point, people's general perceptions of technology was that it was an unadulterated good. And I think people have only started to wake up a little bit, or like to have those kind of existential fears. You know, even the people selling the products, you know, questions about AI and all that kind of stuff. So I think the very concept of technology as this linchpin of the progressive narrative is being challenged. But also, you know, I think after the millennium, I think even the 90s was a relatively upbeat and positive time. So I think we just entered into this kind of social and cultural malaise where everyone's just feeling the drag of life.
Yes. It's interesting. I mean, one of the things that I think is interesting about Zoomer culture in particular, especially what we're doing here, but I've seen it's very big in the Zoomer spheres, is the what they call the nostalgia for future visions or from the past. So you're nostalgic for a future that never was. And a lot of this vaporwave stuff, which is very big, of course, is a kind of nostalgia for this imagined future that never existed. I mean, I think that the same is true of the 1950s kind of sci-fi stuff as well. But I just find it kind of interesting that there's a nostalgic market for these future visions, yet the current market for future visions is, you know, just seems dystopian. Like there's no market for the World Economic Forum thinking, you know, you'll own nothing and be happy videos, is there?
You can have a Nokia implanted into your face. I mean, that's the latest one I saw. Do you see the Nokia guy talking at the WWF that all of his products are going to be implanted into the bodies? It's literally my nightmare.
A question Morgoth was asking, and I don't have the answer, but I think it's worth pondering. Why are the WEFs so fucking bad at propaganda? Like they're just, everything they do seems dark and dystopian. Why is their messaging so poor?
That's a good question. I think partly it's boomerisms, basically. You know, they tend to be a little bit older. So that they're not switched on to the kind of image and the aesthetics of something. And then secondly, I think they just drink the Kool-Aid so much that in their minds, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, look at, what's his name? Who's the Israeli futurologist?
Yohan Harari.
Harari, yeah.
He's that fucking awful book, Sapiens. Yeah.
He's literally the worst, but he just laps it up. Imagine 1,000 bug men. You know, they're going to get super excited about implanting a Nokia up their butt so they can call people at any time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've joked before, but I actually reckon our enemies are making the propaganda of the future. We won't even have to make, you know, when the base revolution comes, we won't actually have to make expose documentaries. We will just play the footage unadulterated. You know, I Hypocrite compilations and, you know, what's that other one called? Enjoy the Decline. All of that sort of stuff. You could just stick those compilations on. It's kind of interesting, though, because whenever our regime has to demonize other regimes, that it never allows the footage to play unadulterated, but always sticks a really clunky narrator on top of it. It never allows the, I mean, I remember I made this video years ago called, or a while back, called Another Way of Reading 1984, which had home video footage from Nazi Germany and from Soviet Union,
from the
USSR. And what I was interested in was just showing normal life, all unfiltered by any imposing journalist or narrative voice on top of it. And it was very difficult to find that footage because the BBC, when they aired it, just would not let any video play for any amount of time whatsoever without somebody coming in or reminding you how evil these people were, which is just an interesting thing. Whereas I feel like when we are making our propaganda, we won't need any narrative voice at all. I think just the footage will speak the footage itself, of trans time story hour will speak for itself. Anyway, let's continue.
Sorry, stop. I mean, this is already epic. This is literally if you know, one day my business will be like this. I'll enter the office, and I'll be accompanied by a deep, sawtooth bass sound as anyone enters.
I mean, elements of AC stuff that is awesome. Synth, obviously, right?
Yes.
But also that, you know, one of those like weird, is it the synthetic drums they had? But like they actually played them as well.
Yeah, like the drum machines, yeah. Like sequences, yeah.
Like if you ever see them in live, it's like a kind of flat hexagonal,
yeah,
electronic drum, but they actually play it.
You've got the MIDI pads, basically, where you've got the different pads.
Yeah. I love the sound, the drum sounds on those MIDI pads. There are those lines again. Why did they love these lines so much? These lasers everywhere.
I guess it's reminiscent of like a neon light again, this kind of future electricity power. There is some kind of symbolic connotations to that. If you think about, again, the ray of light coming down from on high again, it's this kind of godlike power again.
Yeah. One thing that I've just realized is that, do you remember when we were kids, there were those Laser Quest everywhere? Remember those Laser Quest?
Yes.
Laser Quest, I mean, certainly the one in Swansea, but everyone I've ever been to had a very deeply 80s aesthetic, well into the late 90s. It was still very 80s, you know, with the thing that you put on and the just the whole look and feel of a Laser Quest was very 80s. So this is reminding me a tiny bit of Laser Quest. That guitar in the background is very lightly Bowie tinged. What's really interesting is that very lightly Bowie tinged guitar comes back around and turns into the Labyrinth soundtrack down the line. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like Bowie ends up influencing himself in a strange way.
and also there's a like a vocoder as well, which is a classic sound.
Do you think the car doesn't quite add up?
No,
doesn't quite live up to the hype around it in this video. These cars.
Yeah. I think the 80s car aesthetic is quite difficult. I mean, I'm not really a car expert, so I couldn't talk about it. But again, the level of epicness compared to what they're presenting is definitely
I mean, the soundtrack lifts this. I would say this is an award-winning Chris Morbidelli soundtrack.
You know what? There's actually quite a few really good 80s soundtrack ads, and we may have to put it on later actually. You know the guy who does War of the Worlds, Jeff Wayne,
Jeff Wayne, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he did a synth track for Gordon's Gin in the 80s, which is excellent. Which it literally won an award, and then even better than that, then the Human League covered that track on one of their albums on Travelogue as well. So it's the only ad inspired music song as well. So again, I think just the quality of music is much higher.
Yeah, it's very good.
Renault 18. Otra forma de sentir el arte.
So that was an Italian advert, was it?
Yeah, yeah. Just saying Renault 18 is something to do with art, isn't it? So again, that's really clever because you think the guy is the owner, he's a powerful person, but actually it's just a painting in an art studio, isn't it? So they're saying, so again, you're already getting those connections between Renault being a work of art. Also, some of the symbology, you know, the kind of bold triangles, squares and circles, it either reminds me of the Bauhaus, which again, through Blue Memphis, was seeing a resurgence in the 80s. So again, just some of the kind of primary colours artistically, that's where some of that aesthetic feel comes from. But also the Russian supremacists, again, this kind of early modern idea of powerful shapes and abstraction on the wall. This, again, the 80s is interested with the idea of power. Are you familiar with the idea of power dressing and power eating?
Yes, yes. So again, well, not power dressing, yes. Power eating, no.
Well, there are these concepts that certain foods would give you certain kind of strength. It's almost kind of esoteric wisdom. So that's where the 80s obsession with sushi came from, because it's meant to be this power food that would energize you and, you know, give you the same strength that the Japanese had to create great products and stuff like that. So, and the same thing with the power dressing. It's this idea of, you know, your outfit is going to be who you are. You know, what do they say? It's like dress for the job you want. You know, it's an idea of manifestation through owning things and being things, which again, I think is very interesting that we've sort of lost. You know, most people dress today either to get attention or to kind of hide away.
I mean, it's certainly a very interesting relationship between form and content being highlighted by the 80s here. If they have this idea that, you know, it's like the aesthetic is not just skin deep. Because I think one of the great boomer truth-isms, right, is that real beauty is within. And so outward appearances are skin deep, right? Whereas what you're talking about reverses that and says actually your outward appearance is a reflection of a deeper inner strength. So, you know, the chiseled back fellow or the power dressing woman or whatever is a manifestation of, you know, genuine kind of Chad energy within, if that makes any sense.
Whereas your
kind of fat guy, that shows that you're an inner sloven or something like that.
100%. And when things like the event force people to dress up and stuff, I think it's super important because the enemy doesn't bother with that at all. They are in the race to the bottom, both intellectually and aesthetically. So again, if we can hold ourselves up as some kind of you know, figures that have come down from Olympus itself, you know, that speaks quite a lot. Just one thing to say as well on the Italian side, in the 80s, there's this kind of reconnection with early modernism, and especially the modernism that comes out of Italy in the 20s, which of course is fundamentally fascist. Especially the design aesthetic of kind of like black leather and the metallics, etc., it definitely comes out of the original futurist Italian aesthetic. Via companies like Renault, etc. So again, I think that's an often not talked about thing about the 80s. It has these kind of fascistic undertones to it, certainly aesthetically.
Yes. And of course, I'm sure that the militant left were calling these people fascists at the time as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Nobody was listening to them back then. All right. When the clock strikes. Here we go. It's a Moon Man himself, look. Half past six, babe. Time to head for Golden Lights. It's a good time for a great taste dinner at McDonald's. It's Mac tonight. Come on, make it Mac tonight. I didn't know he was a McDonald's icon, did he?
No, I knew that. I mean the ad itself's pretty good. I mean, they're trying to go for like a 60s swing style, you know, Frank Sinatra, with again the tagline being Mac Tonight. You're getting this idea of again trying to create the moment of purchasing. Remember that there's two types of way you can market to people. You can either tap into an existing market, or you can try and create the market itself. So again, you know how like we did the Japanese KFC at Christmas time last year, right?
Yeah.
KFC created a market out of nothing just by pure advertising. So you can generate demand through just basically pumping enough ads in there. And so this concept of Mac Tonight, I think it's really interesting. Where, and again, if you see the scene, there's the literal manifestation of the moon speaking to you. So again, it's all about nighttime. Dinner, you're creating these associations, and so rather than cooking for ourselves, why don't we go for a Big Mac tonight instead? So again, you're implanting this idea of Big Macs.
I mean, one of the other things I'll say about that advert, let's just go back very slightly, is that McDonald's by this time would have already had an association as kind of a family place, a daytime place, you know. Whereas obviously this aesthetic is nighttime, it's cool, it's adult, it's so there is a slight, like, you, this is McDonald's reaching beyond its kind of core audience of families, you know. Families essentially.
That's a really good point. Again, it has this more kind of grown-up feel, doesn't it? It's kind of like for the young professional, or maybe you know, young couples. Their city, again, it's in the city as well. So again, kind of implying they're trying to hit city-based people. So
I wonder if this coincided with them opening later or something like that. People would have to double check, but I don't know if McDonald's always stayed open till late. You mean, nowadays they're one of the few places that may be open 11 p.m., midnight, 2 a.m. You know, depending on the store. Whereas I don't know. I mean, maybe once upon a time they used to shut early. You know, who knows? People, I'd be interested to know if this was a campaign to help with nighttime sales. All right, let's carry on.
Inside each Mitsubishi Blue Diamond television set is this: the new CRT. A technical breakthrough that gives your picture perfect color.
They loved the polo rider, didn't they? Have we seen this one before, Farrell? Was this a different one?
No. This is new. This is Mitsubishi, they said, I think.
But we've definitely seen a polo rider before.
This sort of figure.
And speaking of color, the addition of the exclusive Mitsubishi Blue faceplate means the reduction of distracting external light rays. The Mitsubishi Blue Diamond. You could say it's bringing back color into color television.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty weak. But again, the kind of big selling point is around fidelity. Look how beautiful the picture is. And again, the connotations of the horse is powerful. You've got this kind of electric horse at the side, which is kind of captivating and interesting.
Yeah, of course, riding a horse has been a status symbol for centuries, millennia even. I was interested to read in medieval feudalism the requirements of owning a horse to become a knight.
It's a clever way. Yeah, it's a great gatekeeping.
I mean, it's literally impossible for most peasants to ever acquire one of those horses. So it was a big dampener on social mobility, let us say. And in fact, you could even argue it was one of the weaknesses of one of the things that led feudalism to go into rapid decline was the rigidity of the basically the lopping off of those avenues of betterment that were available in the earlier period were shut down. And that actually tends to happen whenever an elite class become rigid and are about to be overthrown. They actually pull the ladder up and make it. They tend to get. It's a sign of strength if you're able to replenish elite ranks from the lower orders. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, I always think to Hardy's Jude the Obscure. If you've read that before.
Yes, I was a teenager, but yeah.
Yeah, but like Jude is kind of like this bitter working class guy who knows more Latin, is smarter than the existing university folk, and constantly tries to kind of show off to them. But it's an interesting critique how, again, he points out that the universities were created for people like him, who are these kind of like exceptional people who should have been integrated with the existing elite. And were in fact kind of pushed out and left to rot on the side. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, there was a tension between the let's just say the aristocracy of blood and the aristocracy of talent. There's a natural tension between those two things, but a good system should actually allow the aristocracy of talent to.
An avenue, yes. I think
it's avenue. It's, otherwise, it creates problems. Basically,
it's a balance, isn't it, between the full circulation and a strengthening. And clearly got it wrong. I was going to ask on just riffing off that. Biden Rees did that D.H. Lawrence video recently.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that was good.
And he was claiming that Hardy is potentially one of our guys. I didn't know what your thoughts on that was.
Ooh, I'd have to revisit, but he was certainly he was kind of part of a group of writers who were a bit down on the whole, you know, modernity thing. So yeah, kind of naturally an ally. I always remember did he write Tess?
Yeah, love Tess. Yeah,
I always remember the bloody strawberry being pushed into her mouth or whatever it was. It's kind of a lot of really rapey scenes in Tess.
Chat, once again, please pray for AA, please.
Anyway, let's continue.
The all new 1986 Mercury Sable is here. The sophisticated wagon. You're all right. The striking sedan with the ride and handling of a...
I have to say, I do not like the 80s car aesthetics. I feel like the Americans kind of lost their way in their car tastes in the 80s.
Again, there are a few nice ones, but again, I think everything becomes quite blocky, but also the ratios aren't right. Again, aesthetically for me, in my opinion. So.
Yeah. I feel like there were nicer cars in the earlier periods. So yeah, there were some decent 70s cars. There are some nice cars later, but I don't like these blocks. Yeah.
Fine European road car. Look out, baby, 'cause here I come. Sable sedan, Sable wagon, ready and waiting for you now at your Lincoln Mercury dealer. Sable from Mercury, the shape you want to be in.
Some VTR owners are taking drastic action, forcing their remotes into more control. Hitachi has a better idea, the VT-428E with a wonderfully inventive remote. Its unique display panel with clock controls preset programming, plus CTL program search, adjustable slow motion, and super fine still. Complete remote control. Good idea, Hitachi.
Again, cringe, please turn that into a little GIF. That'd be amazing. Just the guy tapping his head.
That little fellow.
Half Japanese man. Just going back to that early 20th modernist vibe, if you just scroll back a little bit, look at the interior for the room. I'm pretty sure that's a Corbusier chair. He's sitting in the kind of
adjustable.
Yeah, there you go.
This chair
of,
here.
Yeah. And again, you've got kind of glass, black, white, the triangle. You know, it's reminiscent of Gary Newman staring at his the album cover, if you've seen that, staring into a triangle and stuff. So
this is a very stylish Japanese fellow. a happy but stylish Japanese man.
Exactly. And again, he's trying to solve a problem, which is, you know, the remotes. And again, it's that they've probably done like surveys on existing customers, found that actually it's a real point of annoyance, and a digital remote's going to solve that.
I have to say, I don't really understand what the features on this remote were.
But selling, I think, wasn't it back in the day you had to physically press buttons on the TV though? And that's why he's created a device to physically press it while sitting down. But with his digital infrared remote, he's able to do it from across the other side of the room.
Suggests the concept of the remote control is what we're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Or again, they had like basic functions or whatever. Also, I like how this entire picture is framed in the TV itself as well, which is quite clever. You know, let's go meta. We're watching someone else watching the advert.
What happened to those glass frame door? I don't really see those glass walls.
I mean, they're terrible to maintain, and I think they're horrible personally. Not the best.
Just give me 1 second, Pharaoh. I need to replenish my Fanta, but I'm going to do it across the other side of the room in case I spill it everywhere again. Okay, give me 1 second. Carry on talking. I'll be 1 second.
Well, one thing I think is interesting about the advert, obviously it's actually another Japanese brand. They haven't bothered recasting the actor. So again, one key part of carrying out marketing and growing your business further is about understanding who you're selling to and constantly trying to speak to those people. So ironically, by placing this kind of happy Japanese salesperson in the TV, you're probably alienating some of your audience at the same time. It's probably going to be a 40 plus white male executive. So it'll be interested to know how quickly it actually went and switched across to using Westerners in their ads.
All right, I'm back, and I've rolled back into place on my elite gamer chair. Okay, let's continue.
Slow motion and super fine still. Complete remote control. Good idea, Hitachi.
That's the second of two gifts I want Cringewalker to make from this.
From Pontiac comes the one-of-a-kind 84 Firebird Trans Am. You can order it with aerodynamic...
Now this is more like it. This is fucking cool. Cool. Knight Rider. This is Knight Rider. Get me one of those Pontiacs.
Dynamic ground effects. A high-output 5-liter V8. High-tech turbo wheels. And a close-ratio 5-speed.
Looks a little bit like the Adam West Batmobile, but...
And knowing you, you probably will. Trans Am, only from Pontiac.
Oh, look at that. I like the shot at the end when he sort of disappeared into CGI there. They just like had him driving in like a normal place, but then he's literally disappearing into the future.
I like this guy.
Trans Am, only from Pontiac.
Again, it's kind of like a positive, white male figure, which is very rare to see today. But that's exactly the audience that's buying it, you know.
Yeah, he's kind of like Donald Trump light, this chap, isn't he? Wannabe Trump, yeah.
Detached, it's a remote control unit. Attached, it's a multi-function control panel. Sharpshooter, the space age way to enjoy TV more.
So what's that? A remote control that you actually slot into the television and it comes out?
Because again, I think it's the kind of the beginnings of remote TV. But then it's kind of like, what do you do with your remote? How do you... Again, I bet they did like a market survey and people were like... one of the concerns people had for remote TV would be about what would you do with a remote? Where do you put it? So they're trying to create a bit of a unique place in the marketplace.
I hate to do this, Pharaoh, right? But I just want people to focus on the very slightly sexual look she gives this thing. Oh, watch this. Watch.
Detached, it's a remote control unit. Attached.
I mean, look. Look at that face.
She's just, look, I see just pure innocence there. She's just happy to see the future has arrived. Two cute small aliens have brought it to her. I see nothing sexual about this at all.
Oh, dear.
It's a multifunction control panel. Sharpshooter, the space age way to enjoy TV more.
Again, stop a second, sorry. I quite like the idea of the sharpshooter. That's a great tagline because, again, you've got the shooting. There's the coolness around the cowboy, etc. There's something, you know, powerful about it. So that's a brilliant brand name, I think.
Yeah, of course, it was later adopted by Bret Hart. That was the name of Bret Hart's finishing maneuver, the sharpshooter. So there we go.
Gillette has changed the face of shaving. First, we made it closer. Then we made it smoother.
Can I just make one general comment? Is that a lot of these ads have been quite focused on the product, haven't they? Yes, they're selling an aesthetic, they're selling a dream, but it's still very focused around the object itself. You know,
again, the pain points that people are having. You know, this stuff does work and it does sell. That's why, again, it's quite befuddling the current advertising trends. But it's just because that the market is such a monopoly that there are so many market dominants right now. They don't have to do anything. They could literally have like McDonald's could have a duck farting for 60 seconds with the logo McDonald's and people would still buy it, you know?
Yes. Okay.
Atra Plus. Its lubra smooth strip actually releases lubricants to glide the razor more smoothly. Incredible smoothness from the first stroke to...
What's the kind of raunchy sax in the background? Who is that designed for?
Again, I mean, maybe it's got kind of like connotations of like date night or whatever. You're going out to impress a woman, etc. Again, I think it's really clever because you've got this idea of the product literally being created by a computer. It's been forged from holograms. This has got technology in. Again, this is the real birth of the age of like the techno gimmick. You know, yeah. Like Gillette would in the 90s almost every year come up with a new thing. Oh, it's another blade, it's a ball attached to the head of the razor, etc. It's a coating. This is what I call in the course a feature-based market proposition. So again, you're trying to create a unique feature that no one else has, but the problem is you get into this kind of race with other competitors. That there's a saying, you know, you don't want to keep building a better mousetrap. You know, if you and a competitor in a locked in a race to keep adding features and adding stuff, you're going to spend all your time just sort of inflating the item as opposed to its core proposition, basically.
Now, here's something to think about. I'm sure I've told you this before, but once upon a time, many years ago, I conducted my own market research on facial hair. This was in the the mid noughties, kind of around 2008, 2009. Now, back then, beards had yet to make their big comeback. Okay. And I would ask women, you know, to rank, you know, clean shaven, what is it, 6 o'clock shadow, right? Or the 5 o'clock shadow, whatever you want to call it. Mustache on its own, beard and mustache. Okay. And then I would ask, I'd ask them to do that ranking, and then I would ask a follow-up question, which is, you know, say you rate a guy 10 out of 10, you know, and they grow a moustache, how much does that affect their rating, okay? And I must have asked, I mean, this was over a period of about 6-7 months, I must have asked well over 100 women this question, and the results were stunning at that time. The moustache was absolute rank bottom. You know, unanimous across the board. There was one woman who put beards top, and she was Greek, so she didn't really count because she was foreign, basically. Okay, but basically, clean shaven won stunningly. Okay, then it was the shadow, then it was beard, then it was moustache. I would say like 90% plus. And most women would say, well, actually, if you grew the moustache, it would drop your rating from a 10 to like a 4, okay? Or even a 3. So it was, they were very anti-moustache. But then, of course, it changed. I didn't go back to this research, but do you remember the beard made a big comeback? Mm. And it was kind of huge. Now, I'm thinking that just before this advert, just before this period we're looking here, the moustache was big in the late 70s. Mm. And I've never really understood like what killed it off. Was it Freddie Mercury and associations with the Village People? Like what killed off the moustache? Mm. Because that never made a comeback, period. And then, but now I'm thinking, like, can you see some of razor company strength, like Gillette strength, by whether clean shaven is in or out? Because clearly at this point, clean shaven is the way to go. And yeah. So it's going to boost razor sales. Whereas I imagine Gillette had an absolute mare when beards were back.
I mean, I imagine, again, certainly today, they would spend large amounts of money, you know, like paying influencers to shave, to show their shaving, etc. So I would not be surprised if they spend now large amounts of money making sure that the kind of cool new people are always clean shaven. That being said, I have no idea about the 70s to 80s transition. I do wonder if you're right in that regard, or again, just some of the kind of cool new fresh faces just didn't have moustaches.
I think it became associated with gay.
I honestly think so.
And Burt Reynolds was probably the last moustache man.
That's true. Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, a big moustache.
Yeah,
of course,
that's true.
His moustache was a gimmick. His moustache was as a logo, essentially, on his face. Yeah.
I have to ask you, was this survey your attempt at sharking young women? Basically, in the club, you go up to them and ask them, do a beard survey. That's your way of getting.
Oh no, no, no! No, it was my way of killing time at work, and you know, it was a kind of daytime thing. Not a. I always had a girlfriend, you know. I wasn't sharking. And of course, now I have a beard. I've had a beard for pretty much a decade now. I said my 30s would be my Blackadder years, my Blackadder the second years, and they have been. I've stuck to that, but maybe when I hit 40, I'll shave it off again.
Or go for the moustache.
Well, did you know Richard Herring, the comedian, tried to bring back the Hitler moustache? He had a whole show called The Hitler Moustache, and he lived for about 6 months to 9 months with a Hitler moustache as a kind of social experiment.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting because he had all sorts of stories about what people would say to him in the street and all sorts of things. kind of interesting.
Very funny.
So, he was trying to say, like, you know, just because Hitler had this, it shouldn't kill that moustache forever, you know. The more fascinating moustache for me was the Mugabe. He just had a moustache in that little, you know
it's
that
horrible,
little...
Yeah.
I don't even know how you get hair in there. I don't grow a hair in there, in that kind of, what's it called? Like the, you know, there's a bit in the middle of your lip that goes in, you know.
Oh, the Cupid's bow.
Yeah, he, like Mugabe, if you look, only had hair in there. So his was even thinner than the Hitler moustache.
Yeah.
The last, the Atra Plus system. First we made it closer, then we made it smoother.
Good morning, class.
Cookology.
The study of...
good taste.
In fact, the taste that stands the test.
Yes!
The test where new Coke takes on Pepsi, i.e.
That's as in...
the new Coke pop quiz. Cookology!
This is fucking mental.
This guy's got a name, isn't he? He was on MTV. He would do like little skits for a while, so they're obviously using him for an advert.
Now, despite the fact that he's weird, he does have a 10 out of 10 jaw. Would you not agree?
Well, it's all prosthetics, isn't it? Yeah, there you go. Chat has identified him. Max Headroom is the correct name, yeah.
His name is Max Headroom.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Amazing.
All others pay attention.
When Coke did take on Pepsi in nationwide tests, more people chose Coke over Pepsi. Prove it to yourself. You'll see why more people are choosing the taste.
Ooh, negative campaigning, Pharaoh. Is this Has this been banned? You don't see this. Well,
this wasn't allowed in Britain for a long, long time. I think they opened it up about 5 years ago. And even now, you can only make a claim off a survey, and you can't do vague stuff. So you can't say we're the best, or you can't say we're the champion. You have to say we're number one for cleaning, or we're number one for taste, or something like that. And then you have to tie it into a survey. So you have to make a credentialist assertion.
They're claiming that Coke won in a blind taste test.
Yes. Well, again, in America, it's more like the Wild West. You could literally just say whatever you liked about your competitors. Although there are libel laws or whatever, so you run the risk of getting...
I feel like I read a lot that Pepsi usually wins those taste test challenges because there's shitload of sugar in Pepsi.
Well, again, you can basically fudge the surveys. They do this a lot in beauty products nowadays. If you look at like the percentages, right, look at the bottom. They always have to tell you the number of people involved in the survey. And so what they do is they'll get in like 200 people for the survey or for the live shampoo test. But then they'll kick out the people who they think will react badly to it before they get it in. You know, they do this with juries or whatever. They did that with OJ or whatever. You know, you just get the right jury, and then you get the right.
Yes. If the defendant's black, you stack it with blacks.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
they
have proven in-group preference. That is a fact. You can look that
exactly.
up.
So what you do with your beauty survey is you just say, for example, maybe you're L'Oreal. You ask 100 people, do you know L'Oreal? Do you like L'Oreal as a brand? And then the people who say no, you just kick it out. Get everyone else to do the survey.
Is that allowed?
Yeah.
And then you can just claim this.
This is not scientific at all. There is literally no checks whatsoever. It's just a random survey. Also, the sample size is tiny as well. And you just keep doing the survey over and over again until you get the results you want.
Awful. Free market is bad, Farah. It's bad. It should not be allowed.
Of Coke. Catch the wave. Coke. The Philips created compact disc system is here. The revolution in sound, invented by Philips. Featuring full programming and digital display. Each player attaches to any home stereo system to give you...
Well, why was the entire 80s trying to get to, like, Tron? It was trying to, like, where was it trying to go? That's my question. It's like,
well,
they love this aesthetic. We've seen it so many times now.
But I think it's partly because all of the money, all the growth markets were in physical electronics, right? So again, all the growth markets nowadays are in like online products mainly.
Yeah.
And so because it's physical, it's electric, it's always tied into, you know, ideas of the future, electricity, neon, etc. / space. So yeah, I think that's why. I think it's quite, Philips is quite clever there, using we're the inventors of the CD, you know, so there's other people out there, but we're the originators. Again, it's kind of like dunking on your competitors a little bit. One question I have is, where have all of these huge hi-fi stacks gone? Because again, I remember my dad having an exceptionally large hi-fi stack with speakers, but again, very unpopular in today's homes.
Yes. In fact, my brand new rig here does not have speakers. And I've considered a few times whether I want to buy speakers or not. And I've just not done it. I just use headphones. You know, it's kind of very telling, isn't it? Well, once upon a time, there would not have been a question of getting speakers or not. Mm. Now I just don't have any. Although occasionally I miss it, you know, but not really. All right, let's carry on.
Pure. Perfect sound. Forever.
In all the universe, there's never been anything like the new size Chevy Astro. Chevy Astro.
I mean, there's a lovely slab of macho 80s there. Also, gotta love the macho 80s.
Also, this is the big problem with that kind of futuristic aesthetic. What do you do when you have an ugly van that you're trying to flog?
Take it to space, I guess.
Just take it to Jupiter. Go on.
The new size Chevy Astro stands alone with a brilliant new world of cockpit instrumentation, available roof console, and modular seating available for up to 8. Room no new size van can be.
Chevy Astro. Sorry. Can we, can we, Can we stop on the people?
What were they wearing?
This is obviously like a cult.
And modular seating available for up to 8. Room, no new size.
There they are.
Wait for the turn. Wait for the turn.
Just size band.
They all stare at you.
Why are they wearing like red leather? Yes.
And B. Chevy, Astro. When it comes to new ideas and bears, nothing.
I would say this is pretty late. This is like early CG. Like 89, this is pretty late. 89 or something, I'd imagine.
Works like a Chevy van.
That's terrible.
When I say... Here we go, some shoulder pads for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at that shape.
But look at the silhouette there. Again, it's just such a beautiful scene. But again, this kind of idea of black and white, the strong pillars, this again comes straight out. This is literally like, basically fascist Italy, you know, so...
Would you say, though, that a V is a very masculine shape? This is not a female form. This is the that shape there, the Y. So you've got the V at the top and the long line is associated with blokes, I would suggest, whereas the woman is the hourglass.
Certainly the broad shoulders. I mean, they cut it in very, very tight, though. Do you know what I'm saying? It only works when you have like these kind of super skinny women as well. Again, just imagine that on like a modern ham beast, you know, it just wouldn't work. It would just be like a tube, not like a tight V. Yeah. So I think it's you're right. I think they're trying to tap into the underlying
form. She is form. She's a bench pressing femdom. This girl here, she's
okay.
I mean, I don't know if you've been watching Obi-Wan, but there's a black lesbian in that as well.
Okay,
have you seen it?
No, not yet. No.
She doesn't. She doesn't have that V shape though. She does do ridiculous backflips for no reason, and she's gonna do a face turn. She's gonna do a diversity face turn later on. you heard it here first, friends.
When I say sharp,
copiers.
When I say sharp,
computers.
Sharp. When I say sharp, I mean
calculators.
I mean
backspace.
I mean, they had me up to the calculators parts, but I guess, you know, they were still important at the time. You know, like, it's easy to make a TV sexy, but just imagine making a calculator sexy. Again, just in terms of the setting here, I just want to note the color scheme here. Notice the blue background, the blue of her earrings. Everything else has got a blue hue, apart from the deep red of her lips. So you're instantly drawn to them and what she's saying. So again, it's a way of attracting attention.
I mean, there is something Nietzschean about this woman, though, isn't there? It's like she is saying, like, I'm going to break you, young man, unless you try to like. You're going to have to be pretty dominant if you're going to get one over on me. You know, that is there. I'm not making this up, surely. Okay. I mean, she is a very dominant archetype, I would suggest. And that is a challenge to the men, you know, crush or be crushed.
Mm. Okay, I can see that.
I do think this dog-eat-dog Nietzscheanism is in the background of a lot of AC's aesthetic. You know,
that's true.
She is basically ordering you to do things in this video. And it's like, how are you gonna react? If you don't become the BAP man, you too will be that guy we saw at the start, lost in the. Do you remember the guy
just flailing around?
When I say sharp, I mean business.
From sharp minds come sharp products.
When I say sharp, I mean business.
Look at that. See?
That was pretty cool.
She means business. That is true. That is like, what's that play? Top Girls. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Carol Church, she's a proper Thatcher's woman. Marlene, you know. That was Thatcher. That was literally Thatcher. That woman. Yeah.
That was cool though, because again, like, interesting aesthetics. You're trying to associate potentially boring items with more interesting ones at the same time. It looks good. Good soundtrack. You know, I would say that's a 9 out of 10 advert.
Yes. All right.
Pontiac unleashes the new 2000 Sunbird Turbo. One of the world's most technically advanced turbos. It pumps in huge quantities of air and pumps out.
They did like the word turbo back in the day. That's a word you don't. I remember buying Street Fighter II Turbo in 1992 or whatever it was. I was so excited, Farrah.
150 horsepower when you need it, when you want it. Agile, responsive.
I don't like this Pontiac as much as the last one.
No, another ugly 80s car, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah. 2000 Sun.
Oh, yeah.
You want to be that guy. Yeah.
Bird Turbo.
Do you think that guy could take the last one, though? I don't think he could. He's a bit Weasley.
No.
Only from Pontiac.
We build excitement. Pontiac.
Okay, sorry, that's not a terrible tagline again. My favorite part was that it was such a powerful display. It then italicized itself at the end. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw the italics, yeah. So yeah, excited to get italicized.
Exactly.
I don't like We Build Excitement as a tagline.
No, that's just like, again, because excitement is just like, it could be, it's almost like a childish word, I think. I see what they're trying to do. One of the interesting theoretical models I talk about in the course is this idea of utility versus emotion in products. Certain products have a dispensation to one of those angles. For example, imagine a spoon. You don't care about the emotional value that a spoon gives you, whether it makes you happy or sad. You just want it to do its job. But with something like a car, that's a very emotive product. You want to feel like you're a powerful person, or you want the excitement of driving a car, and you want to look good. So all of these kind of emotions or psychological factors are tied into the product. So what they're trying to do is to tap into that emotional side of the product and say, look, this is going to make you feel great. You know, it's not necessarily about this car drives you fast from A to B. It's giving you a great experience. But the kind of the words they're trying to conjure and use, I think, are just totally wrong for the audience.
Let me just show you something. Cringe Walker is.
Oh, he's already done it. What a champion! What a champion!
I don't know if he's caught the previous guy yet, but it's that's pretty.
Cringe.
Amazing.
There's one more. There's one more that you need to do if you're listening.
Yeah, the was the guy looking at the star in the very first one we looked at.
Exactly.
Yeah, awesome. That's amazing work. All right.
Hitachi SF. Smoked face. Squared flat. Convenient, comprehensive, full function remote control. Full frame flat screen design for greater clarity. A totally harmonious picture for more comfortable viewing.
I do think these adverts provide very good context, by the way, for the parent in Time Bandits, if you've ever seen that film.
No.
Who are just obsessed
I've seen ages
with,
ago, yeah.
I mean, his parents are just obsessed with, like, this sort of gadgetry, you know, shitty game shows on TV, and everything in their house is covered in plastic.
Oh, right. Okay, yes.
And the young boy in it, Kevin, he just can't stand it. And, you know, he wants to revolt against the modern world, and he goes off on an adventure, chased by God, of course. Time Bandits. I might do a deeper saw on Time Bandits one day, or on Terry Gilliam in general.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a great, great guy. Did you hear he got cancelled recently? He was going to do the production of Sometimes Into the Woods at the Old Vic, and then he got cancelled. And I was really annoyed because I had tickets to that, but they ended up moving it to Bath. So it's good to see Gillingham still doing stuff. So I'll be interested to see what he comes up with for the staging for that. Just going back to the advert a second, I think this has clearly just been almost like Google translated from the Japanese. And again, it kind of shows you that you need to localize things for different markets. You know, you can't talk about things in Asia the same way. Could you just go back a little bit just before the scene? Because I think they talk about like the kind of uniquely harmonized bits or something.
Hitachi SF. Smoked face. Squared flat. Convenient, comprehensive, full function remote control.
full-frame flat-screen design for greater clarity. A totally harmonious picture for more comfortable viewing.
There you go.
Stylish and innovative.
A totally harmonious picture. It sounds very strange.
This was translated from the Japanese badly.
Yeah, I think so. Also, Hitachi is the one with the that we just created the GIF out of as well. I think they probably just ported their ads straight across. Most often than not, adverts used to be localized for markets. So you would do one version for the UK, one for France, etc. However, a lot of American brands just use the same advert wherever. And I do wonder what part of America's soft power comes from just hitting people over the head with their non-translated adverts. They don't really care about appealing to the unique features of each country, if that makes sense.
No, and conversely, of course, they remake things badly in their own image as well. They remake a lot of British stuff for the American market, for reasons I've never understood. I will mention one of the most famous bad Japanese translation errors gave us Donkey Kong, of course. Donkey Kong was a translation error. It's meant to be Monkey Kong, I think. But obviously now it's part of the legend and the mythos. So,
just on that as well, two big companies I've worked with in the past, American Express and Burberry, both of those companies would allow Japan to have its own website and marketing. And it's interesting how the whole of Europe, the whole of Latin America, etc., they all got the same version of this kind of Americanized sites. But Japan was so kind of different that they had to have their own website. Otherwise, it just wouldn't work. I think they have a natural ability to resist globalism due to their unique language and to because they read from right to left. So it kind of changes the viewing experience of websites, etc. So again, it's an interesting defense mechanism against globalism. Do you see what I'm saying? You can't lay out a website in the same way as in Japanese typically.
All right, let's continue.
Hitachi Color TV SF.
Such a bizarre advert. That was a bizarre one.
From the Canadian amputation. Can we get the last screen there? The war amputations of Canada.
What the fuck? Awful. That was by far the worst one from the Canadians there.
I love it. Just the meeting. I imagine they're trying to appeal to children here, so you can see that that the robot is a child actor here, and I imagine it's kind of trying to tie into the children's imagination. They imagine they're a robot and jumping through dangerous areas, and then what they've done is they've kind of put in. If you can scroll back a little bit, I wonder that if they've kind of worked out what the most dangerous things are that create amputations, and they've made kind of like bigger versions of it. So they had like different circular saws and stuff like that, but blown up in a dramatic effect. But it just doesn't make any sense at all. There's just like no context. It's like robot flies through dangerous things, loses an arm. Don't do that.
Awful. Nightmarish. You could use it. You could repurpose this for nightmare fuel music video.
I am Astar, a robot. I can put my arm back on. You can't. So play safe.
Chevy's on a hot streak now at your California Chevrolet dealers. With the Cavalier Type 10 precision built with styling that sizzles. The Chevy Citation X11 high performance brought to a fever pitch. The Camaro Z28, all-new automotive ecstasy.
Nicer car than some of the others we've seen, in my view.
Yeah, it's not too bad. again, they're trying to create this powerful symbolism through things like the lightning. You know, it's literally human psyche 101, isn't it? You know, the power of Zeus is going to be into your car. I also like the kind of the lines on the floor. Yeah. Give it this kind of like ethereal quality, like it's come out of space and time itself.
Yeah, I've noticed the aesthetic in the 80s in general, as we've talked about those laser lines. There's a lot of straight lines. It's very angular, isn't it? It's angular as well. I'd describe the 80s aesthetic.
Yeah, again, I think it does like do kind of nods to modernism again, where it's all about abstraction and simplification of the form. Again, the Bauhausian ideas was all about, you know, we can describe everything in these very simple shapes. So again, I wonder if that's kind of pulling in from there.
All right.
Speed of fire your imagination. See your Chevrolet dealer now during the Chevy Hot Streak and start a hot streak of your own.
From the edge of time, from the depths of the earth, Timex takes quartz to make a watch for a new age. The new Timex Quartz, a watch so accurate you may not have to set it again this year. Thin, sleek, and more beautiful than any watch you could ever imagine. The new Timex, the new Timex Quartz.
I mean, yeah, that's quite clever. Again, it's trying to create this mystique of space. So again, you can see the watch floating in this desert landscape where there's twin suns. You know, this kind of tapping into the idea of quartz as this mystery, powerful material that has a luxury to it at the same time. One of my the use of the voiceover artist is interesting. I wonder if it's an American brand using a British actor to give it authority and heritage in its sound. But my favorite thing is you may not have to update the time on it. So again, that's a classic weasel word advertiser statement. You know, you can put may in front of anything. You know, or you may not have to use an umbrella during rain with our watch or whatever. You know, it's just you can say whatever you like.
Is it I've just realized, is all the laser Star Wars related?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's other stuff, isn't there? There's like Buck Rogers, etc. I mean, in the 70s is like the classic, late 70s into the 80s, classic sci-fi period, so.
Texaco geeft sterrenkracht.
You are about to witness a new creation.
Right. Can we just give that? What I like about that is it's just unapologetically petrol based, and again about selling the idea of being able to move your car. What I can't stand today, one of my pet peeves, is petrol companies doing like green stuff. So you'll see Shell like flagellating themselves on your TV, saying like, "Oh, we're investing in green products. You know, we're helping." This niche wind farmer polishes wind farm or whatever. You know, you never see those companies talk about what they fundamentally do, which is sell petrol for cars and help people move around. And again, I think that's a mistake, but it's because we all know their borders owned by evil people.
I've got lost here. I need to go back, don't we? Here.
Texaco geeft sterrenkracht.
You're about to witness a new creation. A whole new class of automobile, the Chrysler E-Class. Chrysler's largest front-wheel drive sedans with elegance, luxury, with room for 5, 6, even 7. The E-Class sedan, so technologically advanced, It monitors itself to keep you secure.
All monitored systems are functioning.
Surprisingly priced. They are protected for 5 years or 50,000 miles. The Chrysler E-Class.
That was interesting, yeah.
Again, like the talking voice is just such like a Knight Rider gimmick or whatever, isn't it? Like, it probably doesn't even work, or it would break within the first year. But again, for like the kind of more nerdy kind of guy, they would have been lapping that up.
Sound has a look all its own, but it never looked like much on a home video cassette recorder because it never sounded like much until now. Sony introduces the biggest breakthrough in home video since we invented it, Sony Beta Hi-Fi.
Curiously pedestrian advert, this one.
This is the old jazz Glockenspiel.
I feel like this would be useful stock footage for any for a music video. That would be very.
I mean, this is a long ad. This is again, a video ad length is really interesting because it's in one element you want to explain your brand proposition and talk through why it's a good product, right? But at the same time, people's attention spans are very, very short, especially today. So normally video, like a quality TV ad would be a minute, maybe 2 minutes for like maybe back in the 60s or 70s or something. But nowadays it's you have 60, 30 and even 15 second cuts of videos. You need to keep it super, super short and super tight. This is just like an absolute rambling. Like, we're just sort of lost in some kind of musical nightmare. We're not selling anything at all. We're just seeing musical instruments. So this is a total advert fail, in my opinion.
So dull. It reminds me, I watched an hour of Fantasia with AAA yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Yeah.
I've always found it dull as
fuck. Oh, you hate it. You hate it. Oh,
I've never liked Fantasia. I think it's...
This is the Disney one with the cartoons, yeah?
Yeah. Just
oh, dear.
Shite.
Oh.
I also watched... AAA has really got into Mary Poppins, which likes me.
That's really
she's
good.
Really into it. She keeps it. We watched it in like 20-30 minute chunks, and she keeps on coming back and saying, "Daddy, Mary Poppins, let's watch Mary Poppins." So we've almost got through it all now, but I stuck on Fantasia for some bizarre reason, and again, I have never found it interesting at any time in my life. I just find it awful.
Sad. I don't know. It's a nice introduction to classical music and stuff, but I mean, we, my daughter and I listen to quite a lot independently. My favorite thing that she's been doing recently is that when we put some TV on, she'll be like, she says, can we put something classic on, some classic TV? And I have no idea where she's got that saying from at all, but she's obsessed with watching something classic now. But yeah, I thought it was quite funny.
At last, a VCR that, hooked up to your stereo system, transforms the home video experience into the home theater experience and is fully compatible with all existing Beta tapes. There's an incredible technological story behind it, but to really appreciate Beta Hi-Fi, just sit back, relax, and open your eyes and ears to a new world of home entertainment.
I think that's it.
Sony Beta Hi-Fi. The theater experience hits home.
You know what? Just on that, I wonder whether after the initial sales were probably disappointing, that they tried to have that kind of longer form explainer video. So again, when you're trying to introduce a new product to the marketplace, you have to, you go through a series of different stages, right? Where no one knows what your product does or can see the value in it. Then you try and get those early adopters. Then it goes mainstream. Then you kind of milk the product, and then it eventually dies, basically. And during that initial stage, it's all about explaining the value. You know, like why do you want to get this over anything else? And so I wonder whether they had some kind of poor initial sales. What can we do? Oh, we need these kind of longer form, expensive videos to explain the true value of it, that you're getting on this kind of beautiful sounding audio from it. But obviously, in the long run, it failed.
All right, so shall we hit some super chats and get out of here?
Sure, that sounds great.
Well,
could we put on that Gordon's Gin advert that I was going on about?
Yes, I'm worried about copyright.
Oh, okay, fine.
Because they may, if they take it down, it'll be this will disappear for 2 days.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll check it out. Maybe we'll do like a favorite ads stream one time, and I'll definitely include it as part of that.
I mean, I've got so many 80s ads here, it's unreal. We could go on for hours, but I think that's a good place to finish. So, Hugh James says, AA, speaking of the 1980s, who designed the cover art of your Amazon bestseller? It looks like a handbook for an 80s Toyota Corolla. I don't know. I love the cover design, though. I don't know who designed it. Somebody who works for Imperium Press designed it. They actually sent me two covers, and that was the alternative design after I said that the first one looked a bit fashy. I want to see it. Have you seen the original design, Farrow?
Yes, I had done, yeah.
Let's see if I can find it. There it is. Hold on. Yeah, the alternative one was the cover that's become the cover now. But let me just show people the original. I was concerned that it looked a bit kind of well. We'll show you.
I guess your strategy for the book was always to have like a broader appeal, try and pick up some of those unknowing suckers who are just kind of browsing Amazon wanting to take a punt on something. Again, maybe it's for another stream, but I think a book cover needs to be interesting, be exciting, to kind of reflect part of what's inside the book, but also you want people to project their thoughts onto the book at the same time, you know. So
yes, and I thought that the title was clever for that reason. Let me just show you. It kind of also looks a bit like the White Stripes, but that was the original cover. You see, because I said, because they were asking me for ideas, and I said, well, I think a triangle, an elitist triangle. You see the little in-joke? But the elitist triangle there.
The problem is, can you see the thing that really ruffled me? The spacing between the populist and delusion was quite, because of the triangle, they're trying to fill the space so that the gets pushed up, but then it creates an uneven space, which is a bit triggering to me. Do you see what I'm saying here? This is against minor designer bits here, but
whereas the redo was excellent, I thought, on all levels.
It's brilliant,
absolutely tipping it down. Oh my gosh, well, there goes my plans for a cigar this afternoon. And then JD has said, RCW just gave £5. Thank you very much for that. JD says, there's a marketing expert professor called Mark Ritson. One of his key points is that ad effectiveness is trending down despite tech and data. Have you heard of Mark Ritson?
I haven't, but there's this thing in the industry called banner blindness. People are clicking on ads less. And there's certainly, it's a generational thing to a degree where, again, people in the 60s would just watch TV and then buy straight off the ads. I think people are much less susceptible to TV adverts, but there's substantially larger amounts of influencer ads these days. So people, paying money to get the Kardashians to kind of pimp out their product, etc. And they are very effective. So I personally feel like in fact, if you look at the stats, people are spending more on advertising than ever before. And I do think it is more effective. Advertisers are so much better nowadays in terms of the targeting, in terms of the messaging, etc. In fact, if anything, I think advertising has become too powerful in its ability to change habits. Again, one issue I have with the Austrian school, actually, is they constantly see businesses as reactors to the marketplace. You know, they're trying to fill in the gaps, so to speak. But I believe, and it's my observation, that you can generate things, you can generate behavior relatively easily without a huge amount of budget. And that's the problem. We think someone like, someone like Shell talking about the green agenda, etc., is something benign. You know, we'll laugh at them, go woke, get broke. But in my opinion, they're spending tens of billions of pounds pumping in literal propaganda into people's homes. You know, it's going to have an impact, and it does change people's minds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I think the thing is with our enemies' techniques is that they're long term. So it's not necessarily how many people's minds is it changing right now. It's the 10 to 15 year trend, because I think they are thinking on those sorts of timelines. Can you hear me, Pharaoh, by the way?
Yeah, I can do fine.
Yeah, so my computer just froze for some reason. I think you have to think in they think in that kind of long term, which is why, of course, a lot of their stuff is done outside of politics. Mm. A lot of the stuff is done by these quasi permanent institutions that they've captured, because they can think on a longer time horizon than politicians, who have a short time horizon and are actually very lazy and impatient. That's how they get a lot of their power, these people, because they're working those longer term angles, and the politician is much more concerned with the latest scandal, his poll numbers, whatever, and it's just like, oh well, sign this, yes, etc. So that is something to bear in mind. What else? JD also says, we're heading to a cyberpunk-esque future, but boring and sterile somehow, without any of the cool synthwave and kitschy neon lighting. Are we heading to that cyberpunk future? I don't see much evidence of it.
Well, I often say we're just living in a shit dystopia, aren't we, really? You know, it's like I would rather have the dystopia of 1984, because at least they had kind of cool VD screens, and you know, everyone wore interesting outfits. It's just kind of like a much worse version of that.
Okay. Glow in the Dark says, is it just me, or does the ad narrator sound more masculine and the female sound more feminine? I think that's probably a very deliberate choice that was made back then and is made now.
Again, this idea of hierarchy where you have manly men and feminine women has been destroyed and actually outlawed by the advertisers. You're not allowed to kind of pigeonhole people in there, according to them. You know, the ASA guidelines around, you can't show like a housewife washing up, etc. It has to not stare at you. You'll have to include like images of men as much as women, etc., etc. So it's baked into the rules, you know. It's all rigged to equalize everything.
Great. James Carter in last minute, £2 for Andrew Marvell. All right, Pharaoh, is there anything you'd like to shill before we get out of here?
Just my course again. AA posted out the video directly, I think, didn't you? So you should just have a listen to it. I think it's just a really good track. No matter what, I've opened up the first two lectures of the course as well, so you can go in, take a look, have a listen, see if you like it, and then hopefully buy. I think it's an amazing value for the price, so please take a look.
All right, fantastic. All right, well, you buy that now. Buy all the other courses as well, of course. Join the channel. Buy the Populist Delusion. Get a mug. But most importantly of all, join us from Popper Opinions tomorrow. Keep your eyes out, by the way, because I've got a feeling that old Morcar may be uploading something, you know, later on. So if anybody's interested in that, there should be a link to that soon. And we'll see you tomorrow. Now get out.